You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 5720 Ridge Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 p.m.
And we're talking about the future, but how do we get to where we are? But how do we get going, period? How do we get seated? That's my subject. And it starts with where do I point it? I got to have my little picture. There you go. Thank you. Van Gogh. We saw this in our museum. Let me place drop. I was in Amsterdam. Saw this at the spectacular Van Gogh Museum. I have another version of it in my den because he painted several of these. Have a version in my den because someone at some point thought I was like a sewer myself, and so they gave that to me. Kind of a prized possession. I've often asked, why so many sewers, Vincent? What's with that? Why do you like it so much? And I think he was painting them because he was searching for something. His father's a pastor, and he might have been searching for some sense of Jesus the sower out there in the fields rather than in some stuffy church building that he couldn't tolerate. Vincent van Gogh could not tolerate religion very easily. But he had the feeling of it. He could feel that. So perhaps that was it. Probably not, though. More likely it was he was looking for his larger sense of what he was usually looking for was this sense of innocence, this sense of integrity that he thought that his culture was quickly losing. France was turning into another smoking, industrialized monstrosity, and he fled Paris for the south of France where he could still find something that was good light, but good people who weren't so spoiled and were still kind of living that unpolluted life that he thought was quickly disappearing. Some of you probably do this at least. When you think about when faith was good, you probably think back to, remember that time at Vacation Bible School when this thing happened? Or, maybe not. But the youth group, when I first came to faith, maybe, and I liked myself a little bit more. And maybe something like that. He's got this nostalgic look, and he and his contemporaries, I keep thinking about it. That look for something that's missing, that looking for the seeds of goodness that don't seem to be growing anymore was kind of a theme when I was in Europe this time, because we kept running into the idea of, what are Europeans doing with this sense of lost faith? They're mostly not Christians now, but they still have these gigantic cathedral buildings in the middle of their towns. I guess you'll just have to do it for me. This is the one in Amiens, fabulous labyrinth in the middle of it. This is one that has the biggest, football field or more in the middle of the cathedral. It's a gigantic, it's the biggest one. And what do you do with one of these things? There's lots of them. Nobody uses them for meetings particularly for the most part. I began to think of them as these, giant seashells, like a conch shell out down in the Caribbean, laying around on coffee tables. You bring one home and you put it on your coffee table. They're the leavings, the living creature is long gone, and now there's just this beautiful shell. People collect them, collect them all. I got an Amiens. I got two Chart, but they are kind of like a little display of former faith. A little bit like Van Gogh, it's something lost. Van Gogh is painting the lives of peasants, working the land hard outside of his asylum window. Sounds like Europe. These cathedrals turned into museums made me wonder if someday that the seed that became Circle of Hope would be something like an empty cathedral. Bad thought, but I thought it. Something like an empty seashell sitting on the coffee table of Philadelphia. The Christian creatures and their faith, long gone. Faith is such a fragile thing, it seems. And if it doesn't keep growing, if it doesn't get reseeded, I think it can die. It's theologically debatable, but not too experientially debatable, because you probably know people whose faith has essentially died. You know, they kind of gravitate out of it or something. They kind of leave the shell like a hermit crab or something. They left the shell of the church and went on to yoga or something, or they went on to something else that was just another container for their spirituality. But their faith in Jesus could die. There's probably somebody here, their faith is essentially dead. I mean, I don't mean to insult you, because I don't know where your faith is, of course. But you might not have the guts to actually open up and have it reseated. You might just go into getting a hard shell at this point, and it's not going anywhere. This happens. The church, you know, the collection of the faith people is even more fragile, it seems to me. Because the builders of those spectacular, I mean, this is a spectacular expression of faith here, those cathedrals. They certainly didn't expect their community of faith to be so fragile. You know, Gwen and I went to Aachen Cathedral in Germany. Here's the glam shot. The builders never expected this work of art to be more of a symbol of what was than a gymnasium for worship. That's what they built it for. It's spectacularly good use, I mean, for what they were doing. And they built it for forever. And the building still stands. But the seed of faith is particularly died out, practically died out by now in Aachen. I mean, honestly, I hope that, you know, you get out of this place pretty soon, like a hermit crab looking for a better place, personally. But, you know... It's a symbolic place. You know, it's like a little island in a sea of graves. I don't know about this Episcopal Church. I hope that it's just thriving, but you do know that the Episcopal Church in general lost 25% of its adherents in the last decade. It's like a flood out the door. You know, they're kind of like a cautionary tale. It makes me wonder, you know, if someday someone will visit a building that you have and you owned in the course of your history as this congregation. You know, they'll pay 5 yuan or something for a little tour in the future. They'll talk about the early 2000s. They'll show a little picture of Julie and Jerome and how they were such a striking, beautiful couple from the 2000s, you know, and talk about their interesting ways, you know, about the wonderful junk food you used to eat every time and what that was like. They'll show a little picture of it and say, look at that strange popcorn concoction. You know, take a picture of themselves with a little egg from the first egg hunt or whatever it was. And then that's it. That'll be it. That'll be the memory. Makes me think that, I mean, I doubt that will happen, but I wonder. I have to wonder. Because we're a little bit at odds right now, honestly. I mean, on the one hand, there are people who are being seeded by faith right now. This week was sort of spectacular. A lot of great stories about people getting faith for the first time. Someone came out and met Rachel on the street and were beaming because in their cell, a couple of people had become Christians. And they prayed with them. They decided to follow Jesus for the first time right there in their cell. So, it's fabulous. This is happening all the time. I mean, we have a whole congregation here of pioneers in the Northwest. You know, who does that? Who would even do? I mean, I suppose you know how stupid this is, what you're trying to do. I mean, you must wake up in the morning and go, why aren't I just in the Episcopal Church? I could just go to church. Just do it. It's beautiful, nice language. No one makes anything up. That's weird. It's wonderful. You know, why am I doing this new thing, this supposedly alternative thing, this thing I have to work on? What am I doing that for? It's like work. It's like following Jesus. It's way too hard. But that is happening. On the other hand, you know, there's this burned out and the beaten down among us who still can't figure out how to talk about Jesus without being embarrassed. There's a whole crew of those in the church, too. Some of us are much more likely to talk about politics than we would ever talk about following Jesus. We know a lot more about it, maybe, too. We actually sometimes look like we're thinking of, if the world just got right, and if we would just make the world right, then everybody would be saved. As if Jesus wasn't trying to make the world right, you know, and if that's the only way to have that actually happen. Sometimes we seem like we're so much more acquainted with this strange postmodern dialogue we're all in than we actually are in revealing this thing that goes so far beyond it. That's so much more than what that dialogue of the world actually is. A lot of people have actually become in charge of saving their lives. They work real hard on it and are really anxious about it, but they're losing them in the process. They're even in charge of saving other people, and they're losing them too. Nevertheless, that bad thing said, people are getting seated all the time. One of my cellmates had just bought a house in Swarthmore when they heard about Circle of Hope. And they came to a meeting because they'd been looking around for a couple of years in their sojourn in Philadelphia, and they're fruitlessly looking for a church that would convince them not to give up on their wounded faith. Last week in our cell, we were talking about facing impossible things. And when we went to prayer, they thanked God because they found the church that they thought was impossible. So people are getting seated all the time. Somehow, there's a spiritual earth in us where the seed of faith can grow, somehow. But the little plants are fragile. Faith in Jesus is like a seed that takes root and sprouts. So I hope you're taking care of everyone's fragile sprout of faith all the time. Your faith, your whole church could be a memory. We don't want some Van Gogh wandering around the United States painting pictures of the last Christians. You know, we want alive Christians. I was seated, of course, like everybody was, with the word of Jesus, too, at a lot of points. And I'm looking back on that, I just wonder how I got over. You know, how did that even happen? My family was and still isn't a hotbed of faith. It was mostly a hot house where my parents' extreme idealizations were starting to come to bloom. They were getting themselves out of their impoverished past, and they were trying to get into the middle class in the 1950s, and we were supposed to be the vanguard into the newness of the American dream. And part of what they thought was the American dream is you send your toddlers to church, because everybody who's going to be a future lawyer should have gone to church. They literally thought that. You think that's funny? That's my life. And so they sent us to church. And to their chagrin, I was seated with the faith when I got to church. This is not what they had in mind. I was supposed to become religified, but certainly not faithful, because they didn't know anything about that. And I found out that faith was actually the native species that gets planted in the human heart, you know, heart, soul, mind, strength. It got planted, and it took. Got just enough water somehow. Managed not to get choked out. Got protected from predators. Amazing. How does that even happen? Learn. I start somewhere. Learning how to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, strength, got to start somewhere, right? Gets planted, I think, in any one of those faculties. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. Are you familiar with that? How Jesus says you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength. The parts of us that get that make us a whole person are, when our Sunday meeting organizers are talking about it, they make this chart and they think of it. We're God's field. They're watering us like they were just doing and planting good things among us. They're weeding. They're protecting as skillfully as they can. You know, we're all involved in God's farm chores, since everyone we know or meet, you know, they have these faculties, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and they're just waiting to be redeemed. And we have the seed to plant in one of them or all of them, however it works. Just briefly, I don't want to go on this because this isn't my main point, but I, in case you're not familiar with these ideas, you'll notice that they all intersect at the middle on our little chart we use, because it's just one person. They're all interacting, and you can't really divide a person up into these faculties and track what's going on, but you can get a feel for them. You know, the heart is where I feel like me, you know, my sense of being a person. It's the seat of my feelings, probably, or my desires, the home of my passions. When we were just reflecting, probably where I'm reflecting from, my convictions, if I feel guilt or whatever, that's probably in my heart. Everyone has a mind. You could call it consciousness, I guess. You could call it rationality, my sense of understanding. where I judge whether it's right and wrong, where I form my inclinations, my attitudes, and probably my prejudices. Everyone's got a soul. Now, this is the important part to me, but it's a deeper part that a lot of us are skimming, even in the church. A lot of people have a faith that's mostly in their heart and mind. The soul hasn't really kicked in for a lot of people. Sense of life in us that transcends time, that place where we can be heart to heart with God, mind to mind with God, where we most deeply connect. That's the seat of where we're having that guilt and grace, read the daily prayer, where we're having that conversation. It's where our deepest sorrows are happening and our greatest joys in the soul. And I'm glad that one of the versions includes strength. That's important. Everyone has strength to exercise. It's about being in your body. We're never going to be creatures outside of a body. But our strength isn't just physical. It's also the ability we have, our capacity, our potency, you might say, the power we're given to exercise, and we exercise it. The seed of truth, the truth in Jesus, might be planted in any one of these places. You know, for me, it really did start out in my heart. I got to Sunday school, went into the meeting, they sing these songs, and you know how musical I am. So the songs hit me right in my heart. And I didn't really need to know. I really don't know much else but what I learned back in those songs. Jesus wants me for a sunbeam. How old are you? You might have heard that one. Kurt Cobain said, Jesus don't want me for a sunbeam, so go figure. But it's those little heart-to-heart places, like this little scene from when Jesus is talking to the thief on the cross, and the thief leans over and says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And you make a little song. You know it? Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Now you know it. Try it. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Perfect little heart song. This is a little seed thought. I'm the thief. I'm the one that is talking to Jesus who's being crucified for me. If I'm fertile ground in my heart, that sprouts. That's how it worked with me. But by the time I was a preteen, it was mostly impacting my mind. I felt I was getting old. I needed to grow out of childish things, of course. I don't know if you have any 10-year-olds, but they feel like that. I realized I needed to grow later back into them, but not then. My best me is still the heartfelt child, but I had to get through my mind first, I think. It's kind of hard work, and some of us never get beyond this. Some of us have Christianity, it's mostly in our mind. I was kind of like, at that point, these guys on the road to Emmaus after the crucifixion, about whom it says, Jesus opened their minds so they could understand the scriptures. These are like Van Gogh's peasants, right? This is Fritz von Ude. He painted this the year Van Gogh died. And they're still painting, you know. Jesus would have been talking to peasants like this. They're the ones who listen to stuff. They're almost childlike in that way. It really hit me when I was in my teenage years, and I had this strange overseas trip, and I ended up with a Bible. That was the only thing I could read, and I actually read the Bible. And it started this whole investigation about Christianity that was really important to me. If you have never gone through this, you don't read the Bible, you don't study at all, you're you might be wasting the whole faculty. It's really useful. You know, go do the investigation. You have an interior argument going in your mind all the time. You probably should be able to talk to yourself with some kind of authority, something that's not just from your latest opinion or feeling and that you turned into a thought. You know, you might want to actually do the work. Read the Bible, study whether the resurrection ever really happened, and stuff like that. What do I really think about evolution? You know, why do I do this and not that? Crucial thoughts that everybody has to sort out. But what I really needed was the seed to penetrate my soul. I was pretty convinced in my mind. But it's not really enough. And if any of you are 30, and most of you I think are, it's really hard to get through your 30s with faith if it's just in your mind. It really needs to be planted in your soul. So fortunately, my sojourn in the Bible introduced me to the splendid Apostle Paul. I don't know how you feel about him, but he became like my best friend because he was such an alive Christian. And I didn't know that the Bible included one of those until I read his letters. And I realized, oh, this is like a guy, you know, and things happen to him, you know, and he talks to people in sometimes too colorful ways, just like me. And he's having a process, and he's telling you about it. He had this great experience, you know, as you know, perhaps when he was on his way to Damascus. This is a modern icon. He was a very religious guy, already trying to be the best Jew possible, trying to keep people who were, you know, fake Jews out of, you know, circulation, going to Damascus to lock them up. And he had, and Jesus right there, I think it probably happened exactly that way. Jesus is like a little cartoon comment box, he's coming to, but he's really penetrating Paul's mind. I like how it's pointed right there at his frontal lobe. And he's having that, right where it needs to be pointed in you too, you know, because that's where you're making all your decisions. And I had to open up my life to more, or I was going to lose my life. And I figured this out in my mind, but then I realized I have to do something about this. If I'm going to have a relationship with God, the witness of the Bible that I'm working on says that you're going to have it person to person with God. It's going to be a soul-to-soul, spirit-to-spirit relationship. So it's a make-it-or-break-it time for me. The Pentecostals helped me quite a bit. I hadn't had that many experiences. I kind of went looking for them. I had my heart songs. I had my mind. I started working on it, started keeping a journal to see what was actually going on. I actually decided to pray every day. What? I said, well, if you're going to be a Christian... See, I don't come from a Christian background. Those of you who are kind of half evacuating your past Christian background, sorry. You know, I was going the opposite direction. I didn't have one. So I was always going in, you know, saying, oh, no, I want to be a Christian. I believe this stuff. I'm thinking about it, but I need to go. I need to keep going. And so I did. I found some Pentecostals, and they thought, no, we're talking to the Spirit right now. We're doing it. Let's do it. That was great for me. Every experience kind of added up. But the one that became crucial to me came later when I've actually learned that God will connect with me in silence. You know, when I finally got to this place, I remembered all those times when I was a kid where I had felt some sense of calming come upon me when I was really anxious. I had a bedroom that was kind of out in the far reaches of my house. Felt scary to me, and I would sing my songs, and God would actually comfort me. And I could remember those; they came back to my mind. I remembered back when I was a preteen once, and I was out in the desert, and I looked up at the sky in the middle of the night. They told me, "Don't get out of your bed. Don't get off your cot. You'll get bit by a rattlesnake." I got off my cot, and I went up to the top of the hill, and I had the whole Milky Way out in front of me. First, I'd never seen it like that before. I still remember it. I just tingled because of it, you know, because I remember the sense of connection with God at that moment. And when I went silent, I realized that there was that availability of God to me all the time. And I was learning how to have it. So when I was looking to get soul to soul with God, I really honed into the story of Paul meeting Jesus on the way to Damascus. And that risen Jesus coming to someone was what I really wanted. I like how this is happening with Paul here. Don't you just love this picture? This is, again, this is before Van Gogh, where they're still painting things just super realistically. And I just love how Paul's all dirty and all the rich people are so white. You ever thought, you know, how much money and servanthood it took you to keep your clothes white in the century where Paul was living? So Paul's up there talking to the 1% about his story right now. And I was realizing when I was reading this, and later on when I was meditating on it, that when I was a child, they didn't tell me these kinds of stories about Paul and his experience with the Holy Spirit. Because for some reason, that wasn't like the main thing we were talking about. That was like a revelation to me. Mostly we were talking about how you can keep being good and not be so bad that something terrible will happen to you for eternity, potentially. That was mostly what we got, was some moralistic lesson. Every time they told a Bible story, it had a little moralistic lesson at the end of it. And when the real thing I needed to know is, no, really, God will do that himself. God will tell me what he wants to know, probably personally, if I get connected. And that was right there in the Bible. I think they were afraid that if we actually go for that, you might not get it, and it'll be so disappointing that you won't come to church anymore or something like that. Could it be just too daunting? That they actually needed to ramp it down a little bit so they could feed it to me like a Whopper or a piece of candy, which is what I really want, rather than Jesus. Which was sad. I was disappointed in them that they didn't give me the real thing because I needed the seed planted in my soul. But there's one more thing. Might be the most important of all. I actually needed to do something. I needed the seed planted in my schedule, not just in my mind. That's easy. Not just in my heart. That kind of feels good. Not just even in my soul, which could kind of be an out-of-the-body experience, which is convenient, I guess, but not really very realistic because I'm a whole person. I need it in my body, too, and what I do. I need it in my strength. And for me, what that meant was that I needed to evangelize and know this is not going to immediately go to why aren't you guys all evangelists? Okay, so just breathe easy. That's not my point. This is what hit me. I finally found out that I really needed to do this. The gifts of the body of Christ are varied. You know, you're all going to plant the seed of Christ in some way, just because you exist in a relationship with Christ. So that's just however you influence, you're going to be influencing. But I learned really early on that even though I had an extremely small faith. Like a mustard seed, I could plant it really terribly in really pathetic soil, no good farming practices, and it would often grow. I kept having this experience, and so I felt pretty compelled to do this. I always tell this same old story, and I hope I haven't told it to you before, about the time that just really honed, this came clear to me. I was in my dorm hall when I went to college. I decided to come out as a Christian. You know, you put your little cards on the door. You know, this is Rod. He likes, you know, Cheetos. I put Rod, for me to live as Christ, to die as gain. I seriously put that. Okay, so that's what it was like. Because I said, okay, I'm going to be a Christian. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And I had no idea what would happen. So I decided to start talking to people about Jesus. They often just talk to me, to be honest. But because what is that on your door? But I decided to like talk to everybody. One day I'm studying in my desk, and the guy next to me and next to my room, I hear him come in. I get this thing. I say, "You should go tell him about Jesus right now." I go, "Oh, geez, I do not want to do that. This is so stupid. Why do I keep doing this?" But I did it. I took a little tract that the Campus Crusade people handed out that everybody hated, but I took one with me. And because they had given me one too. And I went over to his door and I said, I came over here to tell you about Jesus. And just started, I don't even remember what I said. It was so stupid. I think he probably heard me when I ran back to my room and I was like beating my head against the wall going, stupid, stupid, stupid. I can't believe that just happened. Because it was really dumb. So I handed him the book and fled. And next day he comes to my room and he goes, "Hey, Rod, I prayed that prayer at the end of the book. Does that mean I'm a Christian?" I said, "Oh my God, I think that means you're a Christian." It's like, what has just happened? It was so, I don't know why you did that. It's really stupid. Because I know how this happened. But he used to send me a Christmas card for years. He would send me a Christmas card and saying, "Thank you. You started my faith." And he ended up being an elder in his highfalutin church in Rancho Santa Fe, California. This is, that convinced me that these kinds of things are possible. So like Paul, my experience in the presence of the risen Lord, you know, came with a calling. He's telling King Agrippa here, he says, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the vision from heaven. I went with it. He's kind of saying, I reorganized my life, and I got to you, King Agrippa, because I did it, and it's led me to this moment where I can tell you about what's happened to me. You know, if you want to have a long faith, by this time I have a long faith, that can keep being reseated. You know, this might be the most important element of all. Live it with all your strength. Live it with all your strength. We kind of think of heart, soul, mind. You know, they're like the spiritual territory. You know, but what I do all day, well, that's something else. You know, that's what I do all day. But it's not doing our faith that quickly erodes any experiences that we might have inside. The inside experiences really aren't enough. They have to go with the discipline of a faithful life. And a lot of you, I don't know what you really did, but you might have stopped, you know, reorganizing your life around Jesus as soon as you started organizing it around the children. Or you organized it around your job. You know, it's just a common thing. We all fall into the temptation. And that's why we always need, you know, we need to get reseated. That's why I love Mahalia. He woke me up this morning and God said, touch her. Am I going to go with that? Am I going to rise up again today and move with that or not? You know, that's getting reseated again and moving with that. Well, I hope some in this long speech, you know, that the seed hit you somewhere. I've been telling, you know, this long story. Heart, soul, mind, strength. I don't have any idea, really. I've just been trusting. I laid it all out and just put a long time for it so that the Holy Spirit would have time to seed you. Obviously, if the risen Jesus isn't sowing and you aren't receptive, then we don't have anything to weed and water, and there's nothing else to talk about. And I hope something else hit a few of you at least. You know, I think that God's calling us to be seeders as well. You know, this place is a difficult place to farm, but we don't want to be curators of some museum. We want to have a living farm. We don't want to have our past faith, or America's past faith. We want to have the next faith. I think we're called to tend those fragile plants of faith that are seeded in tender people and nurture the fragile ecosystem of the church where people can be seeded and tended. It's hard. You know, and like I said before, some of us are too embarrassed to even go into the field, so it makes it even harder. Nevertheless, our poor faith is resulting in all sorts of people being seeded all the time. And if you condemn yourself for being a poor seeder, poor farmer, poor soil, poor whatever, you feel guilty because of what I said or something like that, I just want to tell you again that I can tell you personally that from very poor soil, you know, historically and personally, bad spiritual farmland like my family, God can grow faith and keep receiving it. It can happen. Do you want to take time to talk back? If you have anything to say, let's talk back for a minute, just a minute, because I think there's more to happen. What do you think, Phil?
One of the passages in the Bible that keeps me going from time to time when I feel like I'm not getting it is this particularly hard teaching that Jesus just did in front of the disciples, and a lot of them don't understand. They end up leaving him, and the followers still sticking around, and then he turns to them and says, "Wait, you're still here?"
Mm-hmm.
And their answer was, "We don't know where else to go for this." Words of truth. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And Philly, it's like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Any others? Sure, Julian.
You got my attention when you said that maybe we stopped feeling faith when you said it was going to be crazy. For me, I felt like there was a lot of truth in that experience. I started knowing that I was about to be a parent. There were a lot of things to do and preparations to make.
Well, you have this dynasty of little Christians that you can build, you know. That'd be fabulous. Why not do that? If you got nothing else to do, you got built-in disciples in the living room. You know, why shouldn't they?
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.